Chapter 3. The table, upon which he half lay and half dropped it, with a lively sense of its being thoroughly heated, just as the subject of his praises entered the room, bearing another tray and a lantern, and followed by a venerable old man with long gray hair. Mrs. William, like Mr. William, was a simple, innocent-looking person, in whose smooth cheeks the cheerful red of her husband's official waistcoat was very pleasantly repeated. But whereas Mr. William's light hair stood on end all over his head, and seemed to draw his eyes up with it in an excess of bustling readiness for anything, the dark brown hair of Mrs. William was carefully smoothed down, and waved away under a trim tidy cap, in the most exact and quiet manner imaginable. Whereas Mr. William's very trousers hitched themselves up at the ankles, as if it were not in their iron-gray nature to rest without looking about them, Mrs. William's neatly flowered skirts, red and white, like her own pretty face, were as composed and orderly, as if the very wind, that blew so hard out of doors, could not disturb one of their folds. Whereas his coat had something of a fly-away and half-off appearance about the collar and breast, her little bodice was so placid and neat that there should have been protection for her in it, had she needed any, with the roughest people. Who could have had the heart to make so calm a bosom swell with grief, or throb with fear, or flutter with a thought of shame? To whom would its repose and peace have not appealed against disturbance, like the innocent slumber of a child? Punctual, of course, Millie, said her husband, relieving her of the tray, or it wouldn't be you. Here's Mrs. William, sir. He looks lonelier than ever tonight, whispering to his wife, as he was taking the tray, and ghostlier altogether. Without any show of hurry or noise, or any show of herself even, she was so calm and quiet, Millie set the dishes she had brought upon the table. Mr. William, after much clattering and running about, having only gained possession of a butter boat of gravy, which he stood ready to serve. What is that the old man has in his arms? Asked Mr. Redlaw, as he sat down to his solitary meal. Holly, sir, replied the quiet voice of Millie. That's what I say myself, sir, interposed Mr. William, striking in with the butter boat. Berries is so seasonable to the time of year. Brown gravy. Another Christmas come, another year gone, murmured the chemist, with a gloomy sigh. More figures in the lengthening sum of recollection, that we work, and work at to our torment, till death idly jumbles all together, and rubs all out. So, Philip, breaking off, and raising his voice as he addressed the old man, standing apart, with his glistening burden in his arms, from which the quiet Mrs. William took small branches, which she noiselessly trimmed with her scissors, and decorated the room with, while her aged father-in-law looked on much interested in the ceremony. My duty to you, sir, returned the old man. Should have spoke before, sir, but know your ways, Mr. Redlaw proud to say, and wait till spoke to. Merry Christmas, sir, and Happy New Year, and many of 'em. Have had a pretty many of 'em myself, ha, ha, and may take the liberty of wishing 'em. I'm 87. Have you had so many that were merry and happy? Asked the other. Eh, sir, ever so many, returned the old man. Is his memory impaired with age? It is to be expected now, said Mr. Redlaw, turning to the son, and speaking lower. Not a morsel of it, sir, replied Mr. William. That's exactly what I say myself, sir. There never was such a memory as my father's. He's the most wonderful man in the world. He don't know what forgetting means. It's the very observation I'm always making to Mrs. William, sir, if you'll believe me. Mr. Swidger, in his polite desire to seem to acquiesce at all events, delivered this as if there were no iota of contradiction in it, and it were all said in unbounded and unqualified assent. The chemist pushed his plate away, and, rising from the table, walked across the room to where the old man stood looking at a little sprig of holly in his hand. It recalls the time when many of those years were old and new then, he said, observing him attentively and touching him on the shoulder. Does it? Oh, many, many, said Philip, half awaking from his reverie. I'm 87. Merry and happy, was it? Asked the chemist in a low voice. Merry and happy, old man? Maybe as high as that, no higher, said the old man, holding out his hand a little way above the level of his knee, and looking retrospectively at his questioner, when I first remember him. Cold, sunshiny day it was, out a-walking, when someone that was my mother as sure as you stand there, though I don't know what her blessed face was like, for she took ill, and died at Christmas time, told me they were food for birds. The pretty little fellow thought that's me, you understand that bird's eyes were so bright, perhaps, because the berries that they lived on in the winter were so bright. I recollect that. And I'm 87. Merry and happy. Mused the other, bending his dark eyes upon the stooping figure, with a smile of compassion. Merry and happy and remember well? Resumed the old man, catching the last words. I remember him well in my school time, year after year, and all the merry-making that used to come along with him. I was a strong chap then, Mr. Redlaw, and, if you'll believe me, hadn't my match at football within 10 miles. Where's my son William? Hadn't my match at football, William, within 10 miles. That's what I always say, father, returned the son promptly, and with great respect. You are a Swidger, if ever there was one of the family. Dear, said the old man, shaking his head as he again looked at the holly. His mother, my son William's my youngest son, and I have sat among them all, boys and girls, little children and babies, many a year, when the berries like these were not shining half so bright all round us, as their bright faces. Many of them are gone, she's gone, and my son George, our eldest, who was her pride more than all the rest, is fallen very low. But I can see them, when I look here, alive and healthy, as they used to be in those days. And I can see him, thank God, in his innocence. It's a blessed thing to me, at 87. The keen look that had been fixed upon him with so much earnestness, had gradually sought the ground. When my circumstances got to be not so good as formerly, through not being honestly dealt by, and I first come here to be custodian, said the old man, which was upwards of 50 years ago, where's my son William? More than half a century ago, William. That's what I say, father, replied the son, as promptly and dutifully as before, that's exactly where it is. 2 times 0's an 0, and 2 times 5's 10, and there's 100 of 'em. It was quite a pleasure to know that one of our founders, or more correctly speaking, said the old man, with a great glory in his subject and his knowledge of it, one of the learned gentlemen that helped endow us in Queen Elizabeth's time, for we were founded afore her day, left in his will, among the other bequests he made us, so much to buy holly, for garnishing the walls and windows, come Christmas. There was something homely and friendly in it. Being but strange here then, and coming at Christmas time, we took a liking for his very picture that hangs in what used to be, anciently, afore our 10 poor gentlemen commuted for an annual stipend in money, our great dinner hall. A sedate gentleman in a peaked beard, with a ruff round his neck, and a scroll below him, in old English letters, Lord, keep my memory green. Apostrophe, you know all about him, Mr. Redlaw? I know the portrait hangs there, Philip. Yes, sure, it's the second on the right, above the paneling. I was going to say he has helped to keep my memory green. I thank him for going round the building every year, as I may doing now, and freshening up the bare rooms with these branches and berries, freshens up my bare old brain. One year brings back another, and that year another, and those others numbers. At last, it seems to me, as if the birth time of our Lord was the birth time of all I have ever had affection for, or mourned for, or delighted in, and they're a pretty many, for I'm 87. Merry and happy, murmured Redlaw to himself. The room began to darken strangely. So you see, sir, pursued old Philip, whose ale wintry cheek had warmed into a ruddier glow, and whose blue eyes had brightened while he spoke. I have plenty to keep, when I keep this present season. Now, where's my quiet mouse? Chattering's the sin of my time of life, and there's half the building to do yet. If the cold don't freeze us first, or the wind don't blow us away, or the darkness don't swallow us up. The quiet mouse had brought her calm face to his side, and silently taken his arm, before he finished speaking. Come away, my dear, said the old man. Mr. Redlaw won't settle to his dinner, otherwise, till it's cold as the winter. I hope you'll excuse me rambling on, sir, and I wish you good night, and, once again, a merry stay, said Mr. Redlaw, resuming his place at the table, more, it would have seemed from his manner, to reassure the old keeper, than in any remembrance of his own appetite. Spare me another moment, Philip. William, you were going to tell me something to your excellent wife's honor. It will not be disagreeable to her to hear you praise her. What was it? Why, that's where it is, you see, sir, returned Mr. William Swidger, looking towards his wife in considerable embarrassment. Mrs. Williams got her eye upon me. But you're not afraid of Mrs. Williams' eye? Why, no, sir, returned Mr. Swidger, that's what I say myself. It wasn't made to be afraid of. It wouldn't have been made so mild, if that was the intention. But I wouldn't like to Millie. Him, you know. Down in the buildings. Mr. William, standing behind the table, and rummaging disconcertedly among the objects upon it, directed persuasive glances at Mrs. William, and secret jerks of his head and thumb at Mr. Redlaw, as alluring her towards him. Him, you know, my love, said Mr. William. Down in the buildings. Tell, my dear, hear the works of Shakespeare in comparison with myself. Down in the buildings, you know, my love. Student. Student? Repeated Mr. Redlaw, raising his head. That's what I say, sir, cried Mr. William, in the utmost animation of assent. If it wasn't the poor student down in the buildings, why should you wish to hear it from Mrs. William's lips? Mrs. William, my dear buildings. I didn't know, said Millie, with a quiet frankness, free from any haste or confusion, that William had said anything about it, or I wouldn't have come. I asked him not to. It's a sick young gentleman, sir, and very poor, I am afraid, who is too ill to go home this holiday time, and lives, unknown to anyone, in but a common kind of lodging for a gentleman, down in Jerusalem buildings. That's all, sir. Why have I never heard of him? Said the chemist, rising hurriedly. Why has he not made his situation known to me? Sick. Give me my hat and cloak. Poor. What house? What number? Oh, you mustn't go there, sir, said Millie, leaving her father-in-law, and calmly confronting him with her collected little face and folded hands. Not go there? Oh dear, no. Said Millie, shaking her head, as at a most manifest and self-evident impossibility. It couldn't be thought of. What do you mean? Why not? Why, you see, sir, said Mr. William Swidger, persuasively and confidentially, that's what I say. Depend upon it, the young gentleman would never have made his situation known to one of his own sex. Mrs. Williams has got into his confidence, but that's quite different. They all confide in Mrs. William, they all trust her. A man, sir, couldn't have got a whisper out of him, but woman, sir, and Mrs. William combined, there is good sense and delicacy in what you say, William, returned Mr. Redlaw, observant of the gentle and composed face at his shoulder. And laying his finger on his lip, he secretly put his purse into her hand. Oh dear no, sir, cried Millie, giving it back again. Worse and worse. Couldn't be dreamed of. Such a staid matter-of-fact housewife she was, and so unruffled by the momentary haste of this rejection, that, an instant afterwards, she was tidily picking up a few leaves which had strayed from between her scissors and her apron, when she had arranged the holly. 5. finding, when she rose from her stooping posture, that Mr. Redlaw was still regarding her with doubt and astonishment, she quietly repeated looking about, the while, for any other fragments that might have escaped her observation. "Oh dear no, sir. He said that of all the world he would not be known to you, or receive help from you, though he is a student in your class. I have made no terms of secrecy with you, but I trust to your honor completely." "Why did he say so?" "Indeed I can't tell, sir," said Millie, after thinking a little, "because I am not at all clever, you know, and I wanted to be useful to him in making things neat and comfortable about him, and employed myself that way. But I know he is poor, and lonely, and I think he is somehow neglected too." "How dark it is." The room had darkened more and more. There was a very heavy gloom and shadow gathering behind the chemist's chair. "What more about him?" he asked. "He is engaged to be married, when he can afford it," said Millie, "and is studying, I think, to qualify himself to earn a living. I have seen, a long time, that he has studied hard, and denied himself much. How very dark it is." "It's turned colder too," said the old man, rubbing his hands. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.